Welcome to the Zevil Rebel podcast. I'm your host, Talia Herring, and this is the podcast where we rebel against the trashy habits that brought on climate change, one episode at a time. In today's episode, my Young Today interns are here. Mila from Los Angeles and Sivan from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. They are here in Israel this year as part of Young Judea's year course, and I have the great honor to work with them, so I thought it'd be fun to do a podcast episode together and talk trash. I don't know. So one of the thoughts I had was thinking back to this quote from Barack Obama in 2014, where he talks about that this is the first generation to feel the effect of climate change and the last generation who can do something about it. And that kind of stuck with me, even though it's a little bit dated. It still is very poignant and also kind of reflects how I think Gen Z is affected by the conversation of climate change. I grew up with the understanding of recycling and like global warming as this save the penguins and polar bears and the ice caps, but it was very distant. And now I think the conversation has shifted to something that's a lot more immediate and emergency based. So I thought it'd be cool to speak to two people that are 10 years younger than me and hear their thoughts on the matter and what kind of inspired their sustainable journey. So welcome, Mila and Sivan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Oh my goodness, this is so fun. I'm really excited. So I asked some of the community members on the Zevil Rebel Instagram, asking some questions. Mostly Sivan's dad really stepped up the game and like came up with some really good questions. But I just want to start off and ask you guys, how did you guys initially get excited about sustainability? What inspired these changes? What was like that aha moment?
I think for me, just keeping up with social media and a lot of YouTube.
YouTube is life.
Yeah, favorite platform. And so I feel like a lot of influencers were getting a lot of brand deals that were, you know, more advocated towards sustainability and environmental friendly brands. And I really liked that, and that really attracted me. But then also just like following politics and like looking and experiencing what our past government and people of power did, and or actually lack of what they didn't do. They just didn't do anything about the issue, and I think that really stood out to me, and I wanted to do something about it. And like Obama's right, like, this is the last time we have, and our government in the past hasn't taken that seriously, and so I think it's now time to start taking it seriously.
Wow, I got chills in my body. That was so powerful. I really, that is like the conversation, even when you talk to scientists or different policy members, it's policy advocates, it's about like making change now and not waiting for the perfect solution. It's about racing against the clock. So it's interesting because I didn't even think about it. Yeah, Trump was in power for so long, and that really impacted the way that we kind of pushed off this timeline. Right. And now we're like, oh, wait, all these goals for 2030 are creeping up.
And he came into office, I think, when I was ending eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And so that's when, like, you really start following that type of
right.
stuff.
Right, yeah.
And, like, becoming more mature and actually, like, listening to what these people are saying. And it's just, like, scary.
Yeah, that is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it was really, really scary, yeah.
What about you? What, like, inspired your sustainable journey?
My sustainable journey is a lot different. My senior year in high school, I actually... my biggest goal when I was signing up for classes was to take two math classes. I was like, I need to get both of them. And I was also trying to take this philosophy class, and the registrar was like, you can't take philosophy and statistics. And I was like, fine, put me in environmental history.
If you have to.
But then I went to the first class and we started talking about like pine trees in North Carolina and how everything is changing now. And the whole thing, we just had different units about trees and then fire. And it was so inspiring. And our first big assignment, our teacher said, write about an issue that's relevant. And I didn't really follow the assignment because I ended up writing about urban agriculture, and I looked at urban gardening and bees, and it was like such a cool project for me that I was like, this is really interesting and I want to learn more about it and get more into it. So
wait,
it's like entirely different.
Yeah, no, but it's also really cool. Wait, can you tell me about pine cones in North Carolina?
Well, it's just basically the pine trees. It used to be a staple of North Carolina. We got all of our resources from it, but the tree itself is really susceptible to wildfires.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do prescribed burns, and it was like, when you burn the trees down, it's really good for it. The smoke is really good for the
resources.
That's
what I was always told.
Yeah, but then people stopped doing prescribed burns, and the trees started to grow in a lot closer together. And then when there would be a fire, it would like take out everything because it was too close to each other, and they would get caught, and it just kind of screwed up the entire like natural cycle of the resources.
Totally.
Which is really interesting. And at that time, the wildfires in the West were really relevant. And it was just really interesting seeing the ways we take care of our forests and how we used to and how we do it now and the mindset change. It was just really interesting.
I think it's also because of our residential, like, neighborhoods were, like, closer to these areas, so we were protecting the homes instead of focusing on the health and safety of the trees. Yeah. Also, it's a different question. Like, are we trying to prevent wildfires, or are we allowed to, wildfires are a natural occurring event. Like, it needs to happen. It just needs to, I don't know, it's a tricky line.
Be controlled.
Yeah. It needs to be allowed to happen in order for trees to live healthily.
So... it's interesting.
Yeah, pine trees.
Very cool.
Okay, I want to also ask you guys about your worries. Do you guys think about the dread of climate change? Does it feel doom? Does it feel a little bit far off?
I think for me, it definitely feels doomed. And, you know, the rising sea levels and living in, like, a coastal state. That's
for sure.
But then also, like, speaking of fires, is, like...
California.
So many fires in the summer, and it's just really scary and... crazy. But I think for a lot of people, climate change can be like, the word climate change can be very scary and like distant and far off, just because it is a big word and a big topic, and a lot of people might not know what it means. But I think if you pinpoint specific things such as wildfires and such as, you know, rising sea levels and warmer climates and stuff like that, it becomes easier to understand. And I think a lot of people don't think that they can do anything about it, but you can't. It all comes down to each, like, individual person, and there's so many different branches under the umbrella of climate change. And I think, like, that's really important to understand, and education is important in that sense of getting the right message out to people.
Yeah, it is such a wide term. It's very...
right. It's an umbrella.
Yeah. Like, climate change. What is a climate, and what are we changing? Like, let's describe what that means. Especially, like, I totally relate to the California wildfire season, and that was just a given growing up. Like, my school burnt down when I was in fourth grade.
No
like,
way.
Yeah, I have friends that lost homes. It is a thing that happens. We're on a fault line, so you talk about earthquakes.
Yeah.
The sea rising, that's a big part of the culture, is the ocean and our understanding of marine life. And when you live in a place, sometimes you take these things for granted, because it's like, oh, these are the concerns, right? Mila and I were talking about yesterday about how it was like we were indoctrinated with, like, saving water.
Yeah.
That, like, it's part of your education. Like, you feel terrible if the water's running, like, a second longer when you're brushing your teeth. Like, you cannot let that slide.
At camp one summer, they gave us these cards, and it was Gabby H2O, and there was this camel that was really concerned.
A camel?
The climate. Yeah, that was a mascot. Gabby was a camel. And you would get cards if you would turn the faucet off while you're brushing your teeth, and it ended up making this trading deck of, like, really,
like,
cool,
Pokemon cards.
Yeah, but saving the environment and, like, turning the lights off when you leave the room. It was
really
interesting.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I like making it a game.
It was some number adding thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. It was, like, math, too.
Did you get anything from your cards? Was there a prize?
No, but you did get a cool rubber bracelet that I wore until it broke.
That's cool. I'm into that. Okay, what about you?
I think the coastal thing is really, that's probably the most prominent concern of mine, because North Carolina, the coast gets wrecked every year. And when I was younger, I was like, oh, hurricane season. But now it's like, hurricane season. And it's a lot scarier. And then going to school in New Orleans, they just keep getting hit. And it's really scary. And I think sea level rise is probably a fear of mine. But I also...
what do you imagine?
Okay, it's funny you say this, because I choreographed a dance that was inspired by sea level rise, which is, like, kind of weird, but it was...
pause,
like,
the podcast. We need to watch this dance.
It's actually really good. Okay. And the idea...
guys, if you're listening to this and you want to see Simon do this dance, share this episode, tag us.
And
if we get how many tags, we'll do the dance. What's the bet?
Oh, it can be low. I like show. I love
she's
I,
ready
I
for
love
it.
The dance.
She'll do it for free.
I will do it for free.
Okay, so...
but the dance is inspired by the thought of the second when everything gets underwater. What do you do?
Okay.
Interesting.
It's an underwater dance.
That's really well, like, cool. It's, so you're going to see it and you're going to be like, I regret making fun of this.
I'm not making fun. I'm really supportive. I love that... artistic, like, understanding of climate change.
It's really cool. It was a little bit of a stretch. I was like, okay, I'm going to make a dance relating to blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool if you know the backstory. The dance is to the song We Find Love by Daniel Caesar.
Wow.
I'll show you guys after this.
Yeah. Cool. Yes, can't wait.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Okay.
Wow, okay. That was a tangent and a half.
It's okay. It's a podcast. That's what it's all about. It's about tangents. Okay, what was the next question? I don't even remember. I'm still imagining the dance. What are the simple changes that we can all make to live a little bit more sustainably?
Okay, so I'm really going to plug the podcast right now. I was just listening to the episode with Natal.
Yeah.
And she was talking about...
By the time this comes out, that's already been added. So if you haven't listened to that, it's time to listen to it. Okay, so what's really interesting about that episode?
She just talks about sustainable fashion and the ways that you can make little changes to shop from your own closet and do things that you already have. You don't need to go out and buy. And I just think it's an interesting mindset change that helps a lot.
Yeah, she gave a really cool example. It's kind of the thing with parenting as well, as letting your kids have two toys that they like to play with or games, and then keeping the rest like special and aside,
right,
and then switching it out. Instead of every week having to buy new toys to keep things exciting, it's you just focus on a few things at a time. So having a closet that are the five shirts that you're wearing right now and two pairs of jeans, and then you switch it out to other clothing, and then it feels more exciting and also like works with weather.
Right. It's just cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, I'm all for sustainable fashion, as y'all know. Like that, I love thrifting. That's my whole identity, practically.
Any tips for thrifting?
I think just like go in not really expecting anything.
For sure.
Just keep an open eye and really check every
part
so of the store. You really have to hunt. It is a treasure hunt.
Yeah. It's like patience.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of patience.
Yeah, but there's amazing things about, you know, sustainable fashion and thrifting and secondhand. But at the same time, I understand that it's not accessible to everyone.
Right.
Because it does take time and like a lot of people don't have that time. So I think even if
and
you
also
don't...
sizing. Like,
right, yeah.
If people are different sizes than what's available in the store, that's relevant.
That's
or I think also different locations. Yeah. It depends if you're living in a big city and there's so many thrift stores or...
Yeah, so I think there's definitely other alternatives for people. Just being more conscious of where you shop and, you know, try not to shop the fast fashion brands. And
right.
The really do your research before you put your money somewhere, because there are a lot of sustainable brands out there who are really trying and pushing for, you know, using more sustainable fabrics or dyes or whatever it may be. But yeah, I think just being conscious of where you put your money. But in terms of little changes you can make besides, you know, just thrifting, is like using
reusable water bottle.
Yes. Or, you know, water conscious, saving water. What else? Maybe not driving your car as much. If it's like closer, you can walk.
Yeah.
Or maybe getting an electric vehicle. Like, you know, those are...
Shout out to the Orangestone Lex family. We have an electric car.
That's
I have
cool.
an electric car named Sparky.
Sparky?
Sparky is my electric Chevy Spark.
That's such a good name for electric car.
Right?
Yes. I love it. Yeah. I wanted to have a little dance. A little... What's it called? Like an entrance song? Well,
like
Sparky.
Sparky.
No,
for your car. Like, when you, like, when you honk, it has a song.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I feel like it's like a... Like a horn. Well, obviously it's a horn. like a, you know, it's really fun.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely, that's good. What color is Sparky?
White. She is white.
I have a black Nissan Leaf.
That's amazing.
Wow. Isn't it cute that it's like called a leaf?
Yeah, that is really
a leaf.
Cute.
It has a little leaf thingy on the side of the car.
It's good
branding. Yeah, but the brakes are bad. So,
okay.
Sorry, Nissan.
Get that together. Okay, those were some good tips. Is it easier to be sustainable if you have the financial means or more time? Does it that play into someone's level of responsibility? And if so, wow, this is a 3-point question. If so, does this change our responsibility? And how can we make a sustainable lifestyle more accessible to more people?
That's a good question. I
think your dad was part of it.
My dad was, yeah. Thank you, David. I definitely think it is a lot... Maybe not a lot easier, but it is easier to be sustainable if you have financial means.
Mm-hmm.
At home, they have a compost company, and you can buy a bin. And then you compost, and they take the bin once a week, like you do your recycling, your trash, whatever. But the whole point is that you have to buy one, and it's not as accessible to people who have to use their money in other ways. So I think there's just a little bit more, there are more opportunities for people who have money to be able to live more of a sustainable lifestyle. But I think there are things that you can do, like all the things we've been saying, being water conscious and stuff like that. I just think it's a little bit harder.
Yeah, I think we were talking about this earlier, and it all stems like from the education maybe the younger kids get, and a lot of, you know, families who maybe come from poor backgrounds don't get that same education that like maybe other people do. So I remember in elementary school, they ran this thing where you would get points for like having, you know, containers in your lunchbox rather than like plastic baggies.
That's so cute.
And it was really cute, and it really pushed everyone to, you know, try and not use plastic bags, because we would all get prizes, and they were really cute prizes too if we were able to come in with containers rather than plastic bags. But like at the same time, there were kids who couldn't do that and couldn't afford containers.
And then they feel punished.
And
then,
also, system. What about the kids who didn't even have a packed lunch and had to eat at the cafeteria? While it was a cool concept and idea, it wasn't, like, everything isn't accessible to everyone, which I think is something to keep in mind. But yeah, education, like, some people don't even know that what they're doing is harming the environment.
Right.
And,
something to think about is like, the majority of our carbon emissions is by the 1% of the wealthiest population. People that don't have as many resources aren't spending more resources than the wealthy people. So I think the responsibility should be on the wealthy people, because A, they're impacting the environment in a more severe way, and they also have more opportunity to learn and to have access to knowledge and to spend their money in a different way. In addition, I think that in general, when we talk about sustainability, we're talking about like what are we allowed to buy, or how do we spend our money to be sustainable? But most of the most sustainable things to do are saving money. Like, if you're taking care of your clothes more, then you don't have to buy more clothing. And if you're, you know, buying local food should be cheaper, but because of the way policy and subsidies work, it's not in a fair way. But hypothetically, in like that world, it would make sense that shopping in a way that's more environmentally friendly would also be cheaper.
Yeah.
I think also when it comes to living in an urban life versus living in suburbia, I think that that also changes different ways of living sustainably. I think also when it comes to accessibility, it's challenging, because a sustainable lifestyle makes it sound like it's on the person's individual actions versus just making the policy changes that would impact everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If we had wider sidewalks, maybe more people would be walking.
Right.
That's not on the person to make a different change in their life. That's just the reality of more bike lanes. And I think there's a lot of things happening by, you know, the city municipality. They're trying to have bike classes for people that didn't grow up, you know, with the privilege of learning to bike from their parents, learning as an adult to bike, and different ways that people, like an equalizer, right?
Yeah.
What can we do as a society that everyone can have access to
and participate in?
Exactly, because there is a huge problem of like, who's going to be the most affected by climate change? It's going to be the poorer populations and the people.
That's what Tammy said.
That is what Tammy said. Wow, you're learning so much for this podcast.
I know. Can I tell you, before working with Zevil Rebel, I was not a podcast person.
Mm.
The only podcast I listened to was the IKEA Sleep podcast when I really wanted to go to sleep, because that they just read the catalog and then you're like, and you're like, conk out. And it's this guy, he's like, hi, I'm Klaus. I'm like, okay, read me to sleep. But I'm getting into podcasts now.
There we go.
I'm so serious. Guys.
We need to take another pause to listen to Klaus.
That's amazing.
Oh, gosh. Okay, good. I'm glad that we've done. Why do you think people are hesitant to embrace climate change as a real issue?
We were talking about this earlier, and I said that I don't think it's tangible. It's hard for people to look at this big word of climate change and understand what's happening and how it affects them in their everyday life. And I think it's hard because if you don't see the changes, you're less likely to jump at any opportunity to stop further damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really well put.
Thank you, guys.
It was perfect. Now for you. How do you follow up with that?
Yeah, she basically hit all the points. Like I said earlier in the conversation, it's a huge umbrella that maybe everyone doesn't understand. But if you pick it apart to different branches, it maybe becomes like easier and individualized for each person to grasp.
Yeah. I think also there's kind of a guilt and blame when we talk about climate change. It's like, oh, I'm a bad person for living my life. But the fact that our society has formed and developed in a way that we're all kind of ruining the world just by existing, that's not our fault. I didn't ask to be unethical. It's just the realities of our lives. It was the way we shop and the way that we commute and the way that our population is growing is not sustainable to keep up with all of the resources that it uses. It's not necessarily on a person to take full responsibility. It's just to understand and then understand what, just because this system developed doesn't mean this has to be the only system. There's other ways of developing, and just how the Industrial Revolution caused this change, we can have another revolution. And that's how the world develops and changes, is more changes. Welcoming the change and welcoming that economic boom that will happen and the way that things are going to progress is also really exciting. But I think most people just focus on the guilt and like get defensive of like, it's not me, I'm not using a straw. It's like, right. No, it's not about that straw. That's not the conversation here. It's about our whole system.
It's also hard because when the whole media and companies and organizations, they're constantly in our faces telling us what the next new product is, what the next best thing is.
Right.
And it's all about how to make our lives easier. And like, you know, just everyday products and inventions that come out are stuff to make our lives easier. And so then when someone says, oh no, that's not right, and it's kind of backtracking, and like now that we have to change something in our lives, that isn't making our lives easier.
Yeah. I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like we were fed this narrative, and now we're like backtracking on it.
Yeah.
I think also we haven't been super clear on our messaging when it comes to climate change. I think there's even policies now being developed of how we're going to educate kids in school. I mean, it makes sense because like even sex education hasn't been very clear, and that's not something that's, I guess that's also political somehow. Everything somehow is political, but just generally giving facts and believing in science is just something that we're hesitant about now, even though that
crazy.
The like, research and the peer reviews and the process that a research project has to go through in order for it to be accepted by the science community is insane. So I don't understand why we don't trust it. But that's, those are some of my thoughts on why people are hesitant. Okay, so why do you think how do you think Gen Z can influence the way the world perceives climate change?
I think it starts with education, because I think that can be a baseline, and if everyone is learning the same information, it's a lot easier to approach it from a place of like, we're all in this together and we all understand, and science and blah blah blah, like all of these things can help it be at the forefront of our minds when we live our everyday lives.
Do you think it's like in school education, or education in the households, or education in the media, or not formal?
Everything combined together.
Click all the boxes.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I think even just having conversations like we're doing now is very helpful. And
totally.
I'm sure people listening are like, we can go out and have these same conversations with other people.
For sure.
And it just keeps passing along the idea and, you know, different methods of being sustainable.
I love that. I think talking about it is the most important thing, because we've had such a lack of talking about it until now.
Yeah,
yes.
Get deep lack of talking about the severity. And the more we talk about it, the less taboo it is. The more we talk about it, the more willing people are to let go of that like guilt and the hesitations. And I think from just a general point of view of what your generation looks like, it's like Greta, and it's this deep sense of morality and people being honest about what you deserve in your future. It needs to come from a youthful perspective, because people that got wealthy by, you know, emitting all these carbon emissions, okay, fine, they're like, they now need to be taxed, or they need to feel guilty and donate their monies to ways to fix this problem. But the people that haven't yet caused any damage, that are still going to be receiving the challenge, not receiving, but dealing with the challenges of climate change, I think that's, it's just so unfair. It's so deeply, disturbingly unfair.
Yeah. I think also a point I want to bring up along with the question of how Gen Z is, you know, coming up with talking about the topic of climate change, is they're making it, you know, maybe trendy or
right.
like they're wanting it to be like aesthetic, which I think people, some people love, like people love aesthetics. I love aesthetics mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But I think it is also maybe unapproachable to some people and unattainable when you have that like perfect idea of what someone who advocates for climate change looks
yeah.
like or like what the colors are, whatever. I think it's like very
It's funny you say that. We were talking about the colors of climate, like climate change and
yeah.
sustainability.
Yeah.
And how like, it's so interesting and like cool that Zebul Rebel's like this yellowy orange because
right.
a lot of our mind goes to like green and blue.
Like Earth Day colors.
Yeah. Earth Day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's kind of what goes to my mind because I don't know, like I'm just an aesthetic person, but for a lot of people, it might be like a hard image to grasp, and then it may be so far off and so distant that they're like, well, like, I'll never get there.
Right.
And it's tough. Like, it's a tough balance because a lot of brands and organizations advocate towards, you know, the younger generation and towards people who like aesthetics, I
yeah.
guess. But, I don't know, it's hard to include everyone and to make it seem, you know, this is for everyone. Like,
right.
everyone can achieve.
Yeah. The hard thing is, like, reaching all audiences because everyone reacts to different things.
Yeah.
And if you want to make it so everyone's interested and engaged, you have to reach all the audiences
right.
and just the aesthetics
yeah.
isn't doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfectly so.
I'm like shepping nachos. I don't know how to like handle you guys. You're brilliant. You guys are saying in such, I don't even have the vocabulary to describe it. You're being like very succinct in what you're saying and very clear. And I just want everyone to listen to this and like exactly what you're saying. Because it's so true, and I don't know who to talk about. Like, who do we message? Like, what do we do?
I don't know.
How do we get on board? How do we get everyone to do this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, again, just pushing people to have these conversations and
totally.
Even talk to your parents about it. Because
yeah.
maybe even your parents, it may seem like such a far idea. Like, for at least the Gen Z, like, it's, we've been talking about these things.
Yeah.
And like, but for our parents, it's like, oh, climate change, why? But no, talk to them and talk to older adults and bring it up with them.
Yeah, I feel a little bit embarrassed sometimes because I don't want to blame them of like, you guys did this. You guys were focused on making money and putting food on the table and you ruined the planet, you
yeah.
know? But it's also,
yeah.
they do get it because they grew up in a world where things weren't disposable and they grew up in a world where things lasted longer.
Yeah.
Literally, you bought a machine, it lasted for 20 years
yeah.
instead of now where it lasts for 3 years and
yeah.
you have to replace it because it's like already manufactured in a way that's very wasteful, right? So
yeah.
there's us bringing this awareness, but like also understanding that the way that they lived was a lot more sustainable in some ways of reusing and having quality products that lasted longer. It's really interesting because our awareness is growing, but our actions haven't changed
yeah.
necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think, like, yes, having conversations is great and doing this stuff to, you know, educate other people, but then also take action and do stuff and really change the little things in your life that matter to you and will make you feel good, but also you're making little changes and it is having an effect.
Do you have any goals, like immediate goals of like what's something that you want to change in your life?
I think for me is, I used to do this back home. I would eat meat at home and maybe not eat meat outside of the house as much. And trying to, you know, when I go to restaurants or just ordering, like try and be like more like order vegetarian stuff.
Wait, I know people that did the opposite. I don't know anyone who's done that.
For my idea is that my mom buys, I don't know, she has her
meat person
that she's been going to for years. And like since I've been born, since I've been in this world, and she trusts where the meat comes from and she knows that it comes, you know, from a more sustainable way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like trust eating that meat, but other places, like you have no idea where
for
it comes
sure.
from. And I just think if it's gonna help in some way, may as well like try it. But again, it's like a lot of people don't think like their one decision is gonna affect
mm-hmm.
like a greater thing, but it does. Your decisions to do stuff will have an effect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's my goal, is just, you know, being more conscious about what the seafood industry, like the seafood industry,
yeah.
the meat industry, being more conscious about where I'm putting my money towards and where like it's coming from, and maybe doing more research because I honestly don't really know
yeah.
much about the food I'm eating.
It's really easy to be in these blanket situations of be like, everyone needs to be vegan, and then that
right.
way you don't have to look into the nuances of
yeah.
the sustainable fishing populations, like the farming or, you know, organics, but like if we're shipping quinoa from across the world, that also has like a carbon impact and an economic and human rights impact.
Right.
I was just talking about this with Debbie Ramon, if you're listening. Hi, Debbie. Yesterday, she's a marine biologist getting her PhD at Haifa University, and we were talking about eating fish because I'm going to go visit my family in California, and of course, the second you land in San Diego, you have to go straight to Mexican food and get a fish taco. Like, that is mandatory, right? So this is, I have to do this. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I've been vegetarian now for a while, and I, you know, sometimes make these exceptions because I want to also allow myself to enjoy life, and I don't think that you need to be black and white on these things. But we were just talking about like, what kind of fish would be the more sustainable fish to eat when you come when it comes to buying local, and also what populations. She was saying mahi-mahi, their birth rate is really high and that they mature quickly, so they're not overly fished. So if you can get a mahi-mahi taco, I was like, I'm not going to these bougie places. Like, I want to go to a hole in the wall.
Mahi-mahi's
like,
so good, though.
So thinking critically when it comes to what are the different formulas of what makes something sustainable.
Right.
And then making choices within that. And then also, it is a little bit of overthinking, and that takes that effort. But it also feels great to stand by your decisions. And then you can also have a conversation with a friend. And I think that kind of conversation is a lot more approachable with, oh, I'm going to order this because it feels more sustainable and I'm craving it and this is what I want. I don't want to restrict myself and I want to be in tune with my needs, but also I want to be respectful of the food and the animals and the planet. And I think those kind of conversations are, that's really impressive.
Right. Yeah, and I think also it's important to understand, you know, not everyone's perfect, but, like, we're all trying, and if you even just try and make a little change, I think that helps in the end.
Yeah, there's, like, a quote of, we don't need a person being, you know, perfectly zero waste, we need everyone trying to be imperfectly zero waste. Yeah. Literally, the goal is not to be perfect. Yeah. Avoid perfectionism.
Exactly, because then when you do advocate for the perfection, perfect, you know,
back to the aesthetic
person,
and
like,
everything.
It's just not approachable and not attainable for everyone. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm also on the train of like thinking consciously about where I put my money recently, and maybe it's because I listened to the podcast yesterday.
Back to that podcast.
I'm just thinking.
I know, it is transformatory. It really does stick with you in a way that's, it's really, it's much more impactful for me than listening to a lecture or reading an article.
Right, because it feels personal.
Mm-hmm.
So just sustainable fashion, where my money's going, trying not to create waste in the whole fast fashion world. That's kind of my thinking. Also, I really want to compost.
Mm.
My family and I, we've talked about it so many times, but we never made the actual step. We talked about doing it, and we like had plans for doing it, and then when it came time to action, just going for it, it never happened.
Why do you think that is?
I think we're just busy, and I think that's why a lot of people don't make the effort to always be sustainable, because it seems like another thought. And it's like, I have so much going on right now, I can't take this on. But if you just do it once, then it's in your routine, and you have it there, but it's just making the initial.
For sure.
Switch.
Everyone has a threshold. Yeah. It's not something that's fun to talk about, that like you have a limited amount of shits you can give. Like,
right.
That's not okay to say, but like it kind of is. You really can't deeply care about everything going on, because it's like the homeless population. It's about trash in the street. It's about your friends. It's about your family. It's about the educational system as a whole. It's endless. There's so many issues in the world, right? So you cannot personally take on that burden. So it's okay to be like, okay, we talked about it, it didn't happen. And also, there's no rush. That's like literally the opposite of what I was saying. There's no rush on, okay, I think there's a rush when we talk about policy change.
Yes.
There's a rush when it comes to corporate responsibility. I don't think there's a rush on individual action. I think individual action has to come from, the conversations are equally as important as the actions, and it's more of a movement, and movements take time, and we have to be aware of, okay, your family talked about it. It wasn't right for them in their situation to do it there, but it still stuck with you. So that still, that kind of answered that need of the conversation. And the next thing is, okay, so you're going to compost now. That's a logistical thing now. Right. We did the hard work of the conversations, and now it's just the logistics. So, like, I can send you a map of where you can compost in Tel Aviv, or when you go to college next year, you can see if there's a compost on campus, or you can start the compost on campus. Then it's all the conversations of your parents. Not only were worth it, but the impact is so much bigger. If you're going to bring compost to a college campus, that's going to impact so many thousands of people.
Right.
That's way different than a family doing it, right? So, like, we sometimes get a little bit anxious about individual impact. Right now, I have to do these things, and this is what it has to be. The conversations are no less important than the final action, because the final action could be totally different.
Totally.
Agreed.
Amazing. I'm glad that we all agree. That would have been so embarrassing if you were like, no, false, Talia. Okay. I think the next question is, what do you think about these day-to-day questions about which options are more sustainable? So one person asked on Instagram saying, buying 4 glass jars of maple syrup or soy sauce versus buying one bigger container that's made of plastic, because buying in bulk is sustainable because it's less packaging, but plastic is made out of, you know, fossil fuels, and glass, of course, it's made out of sand, which is also a resource. We don't want to waste that, but it's easier to recycle. Where do we draw the line on these kind of things?
That's a hard question.
Yeah.
I think personally, if I had to take the example of like glass versus that a big plastic thing like the 4 glass jars, I would go for glass just because I feel like there's so many more uses afterwards. Mm-hmm. My family drinks out of mason jars, and like
they're so trendy. Wow,
right? I know.
That is hipster. Oregon,
we got it for my dad's best friend Ken Avanoso. So if you're listening,
hey Ken, what's up?
There's so many uses for a glass jar, mm-hmm. and that way I feel like if you buy it once, at least you'll get its purpose and a life out of it. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Extending the reusing.
Yeah.
Extending the life. Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, it's interesting that you say it, you know, has more uses, because I think it does. But also, like, when I'm throwing away glass versus plastic, I think I'm much more, like, consciously aware about where I put that glass. Where I put that glass bottle, or where I put that glass container.
You're saying, like, in the recycling bin, or just in general?
Yeah, in the recycling bin. Like, I'm much more aware, okay, this is glass. Like, it goes in the recycling. Whereas a lot of people might be confused about the plastic and the type of plastic it is. Or where it goes. I don't know. I think glass.
Yeah, the end of
this
life.
This is glass. Recycle.
It is more simple.
When I recycle glass, like, when I take the recycling out of my house, normally I just throw it in the bin. But, like, when I do glass, I'm like, well, I can't just throw it in the bin. Because
I love the throwing. Yeah, it's like, psh.
But it's so scary. I feel like it's going to, like, shatter.
It's, like, a much more precious material. So I'm like, you want to care for it.
Yeah. Okay. I put the glass in, and then I dump everything else in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
I think so, too. I think with these kind of situations, I mean, sustainable is such a general term that there's not even like a very helpful definition of what sustainable is, right? So what could be more sustainable? Buying something local, because then the shipping of this product is going, you know, using less carbon emissions, or buying something that's fair trade and they're paying their employees a fair amount, right? So I don't know how that like comes into maple syrup and soy sauce, for example, but these are questions that's not only about the packaging of the product, but it's also the product itself.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to these things, it's also like, this is not going to be the end all be all with climate change. So sometimes these are the small battles that you're like, okay, this is convenient on my trip to the farmer's market, and this is what they're selling, and I'm going to buy all these vegetables that are organic and local, so it goes together. And I think that is also really cool to imagine. Right now, this is different packaging than I expected, but it makes sense with this general thoughtful lifestyle, and I think that also can be a little bit empowering. But these are things that, like, I don't think there's a cut yes or no answer on what is like the right thing and the wrong thing, which is challenging, because you want to feel like you're doing the right thing. But I think the point of living a more ethical life or a more sustainable life is not, yay, I feel like a good person, yay me, gold star. It's like, how can I be helpful to the world? Yeah. Where am I assisting?
Yeah.
And I think when you put in the lens of the context is, what's helpful? Maybe shopping at a local store is like more helpful for the local economy. Maybe that's more sustainable. What is helping? Not like my individual actions, but like what is helpful for society to be in a better place? That's sometimes helps me answer these kind of questions.
Yeah. It's a good way to think about it.
Cool. This was so much fun. Thank you guys so much.
Sivan just
Sivan's so excited to edit this. She's like, gonna put my headphones on. So thank you guys for joining me. And Zevo Rebels, I hope you guys enjoyed this. Maybe we'll do another episode with you guys. This was fun. I enjoyed it. So if you enjoyed it as much as I did, please share this podcast. Put it on your story and tag us. Share on Facebook. Tell people to listen. We want to grow this podcast as much as possible because I think the content here is accessible and fun and hopefully enjoyable for you guys to learn as much as Sivan is learning from editing it. Sivan and Mila, thank you so much for joining me. Really, really, really thank you. And next episode, I will be interviewing Rebecca Rudick from Tipa Corp, which is a really cool Israeli organization, or not organization, an Israeli company that creates compostable plastic packaging for fashion packaging and food packaging, and it's home compostable, so it's not like greenwashy. I'm really excited about that. So that's going to be our next conversation, and until then, stay rebellious. Bye, Rebels.